Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
If you want to see NFL receiver things, like NFL receiver routes, NFL receiver alignment, X receiver stuff, you get it from A.D. Mitchell's film, man. I mean, you really do. The fact that he then translates that to those press coverage, man coverage success rates is really important. I mean, he's not great against zone coverage. Absolutely not. 31st percentile success rate versus zone coverage. But specifically working against man and press coverage, I really like his route running. I really like the way he sets things up. I really like the way he works at the stem of in-breaking routes and out-breaking routes, truthfully, against man coverage. Those dig and out route success rates, too, 82.4%, 89.5% on digs and out routes. So that's really, really, really good. And that's where I kind of, like, am really buying the upside.
Matt Harmon of Reception Perception on Adonai Mitchell. We'll get a little insight on Adonai Mitchell coming up at 8:30. With Matt DeBerry, who covers Georgia. I know he's at Texas, but he was at Georgia.
Yeah.
There was a clip going around yesterday of him cooking a guy off the line while at Georgia. We'll also talk about Ladd McConkey. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Happy Tuesday, April 16th. Saber season is over.
What do we get to look forward to? We got the playoffs on Saturday, the NBA play-in before that on Friday.
And 9 days till the draft.
And 9 days until the NFL draft. Draft rumors.
Yeah. Rumors.
Jaden Daniels going number two is the hot item right now. Not only is there a rumor about the Commanders kind of loving him, he is minus 250 at most books to be the second overall pick. Like a good favorite to be number two, which would probably leave Drake May to New England.
Yeah.
Which I don't necessarily love. I like May. I don't want him going to New England. I'd rather McCarthy going to New England.
No, we'd probably love New England to find a way to pass on a quarterback. Just don't get better.
We want them to trade down.
Yeah. Don't take a quarterback. Just stay in mediocrity. Take a defensive tackle or something and talk about how important it is to stop the run.
Right.
You know? Just do that, right. New England. All right, so Jaden Daniels minus 250 be the number two pick. Here's a question. By the way, if you want to chime in on the Sabres and offer a thought, you can. Normally we talk to Don Granato on Tuesdays at 8, but not this week. They're already right to team meetings and locker clean-out and that kind of stuff, and they will meet with the media a little bit later this week. So when that happens, of course, we'll carry all that, and that's what we're looking at. But, Joe, who's the most likely receiver? This is what I wanted to get to. Who's most likely to be drafted, signed, traded? And maybe not signed.
Yeah.
Who would be minus 250? Maybe nobody's minus 250, like Jaden Daniels minus 250 to go number two overall.
Yeah.
Who has the lowest number? Who is the favorite to be the next Bills receiver? Does anybody have a good feel that they'd want to predict it? Like I told you yesterday, a guy wrote into me, said he bet a buddy $500 the Bills are going to trade for Ayuk.
That's insane.
The guy seems confident.
It's insane. There are odds, by the way, on that out there. They're like plus 1,200. To trade for Ayuk, or yep, to be the team that trades for Ayuk, if somebody does. I don't know. You want to draft them?
We could. You know who you would take? You wouldn't want the first pick. You want second and third.
I mean, I think I'd want second and third just because I'm playing the odds here, right? If there's not a definitive favorite, if you talk to 10 different people and they give you 10 different answers on who the favorite is, then I think I don't want to pick first in that, in an exercise like,
yeah,
that.
Not your favorite idea.
No, right. Like who they will actually,
yes,
land on.
Yes.
Who they will have on week one. Who's lining up.
803-0550. Anybody got a feeling on that? They feel makes the most sense that should be the favorite. I want to say Brian Thomas Jr.
I was just going to say Thomas might be a slight favorite,
because
in my opinion.
If you're trying to figure out the favorite, it has to be someone that is in the neighborhood of their draft pick. It is not easy to get up to number five. It is not easy to necessarily trade for Brandon Ayuk or T. Higgins. Like, okay, if not with the help of no other teams, what receivers could the Bills be targeting? Brian Thomas, it's a modest move up. Ladd McConkey, okay. Adonai Mitchell, you want to put Xavier Worthy there or Troy Franklin? The over-unders that came out yesterday that you pointed out have where receivers are expected to go. And this kind of is a, whatever, a collection of big boards all put into one, right? Marvin Harrison Jr.'s, what's his over-under? 5.5? 4.5?
Yeah.
He's going to go early. Neighbors is probably, do you have to listen for any there?
I'm pulling it up right now.
Neighbors and Adunze are what, like 8.5?
Yeah, Harrison's 4.5. Neighbors is 5.5. Adunze is 8.5.
Okay.
Yeah. So you got to get up to pick 9 at best, really, to get your hands on any of the three. And you got to go maybe into the top 5.
And you'd have to say that's less likely than getting up to 20.
Sure.
Or even sticking at 28.
Which is where Thomas is probably going to come in around, right?
Yeah.
And then Mitchell may be picked around the same time as Thomas. Like, really, how different of a profile is Mitchell than Thomas? They are the two guys at the combine that everyone was, you know, going gaga over because, oh, look, they ran in the low 4.3s and look how big they are. Yeah. They actually, didn't they set records?
They are size speed. Worthy is the speed. Mitchell and Thomas are size speed.
I think I remember seeing, maybe was it Mitchell that ran first? Mitchell became like the first, I don't know the exact parameters, but first receiver that was bigger than 6'3", 200 pounds to run a 4.35 or shorter since. Like, Metcalf was the only other one. And then, like, 2 minutes later, Brian Thomas did the same thing.
Yeah.
So there were, like, 2 of 3 ever that, like, have run that fast at that size. But Mitchell's got, you know, some of the other stuff. Of, like, is there work ethic stuff with him? And is there, why doesn't he block as well as some people think? Although that's, you know, the more I listen to that, the more I hear pushback about it. The more, like, we talk to Texas guests where, like, hey, is his blocking a problem? And they're all like, no, not really.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where that's coming from. And, like, I listened to Matt Harmon and James Coe recently on the Reception Perception podcast about Mitchell. And they talked about, like, there's kind of this perceived perception of him out there that, like, he doesn't try that hard in his routes. And they, I think maybe it was, maybe it might have been Harmon on that show that said that look at the Texas offense. They all do it. Xavier Worthy does the exact same thing where if the ball's not planned to go in their direction, they're not running the hardest route. It might even be a coaching thing at Texas because all of their receivers are doing the exact same thing.
Like load management?
Kinda. So
save your strength, save your speed.
It's kind of a point that I'm hearing more and more, which is, hey, Mitchell, like, you're trying too hard. You don't need to be nitpicking him to death. If this was 2 months ago, you wouldn't be worried about this. But because we've had 6 months to look at this guy, then you're looking for things. And so Mitchell, I've gone a little back and forth on. Isn't he maybe in the same boat as Thomas now? With this over-under number
bit.
Two, like, hey, that's the Bean show, right? I'm going to move up 5 spots and get my guy. That's Thomas, but it might also be Mitchell.
Mitchell, so Matt Harmon, he profiled Mitchell, Adonai Mitchell, Texas receiver, size and speed, right? Like,
yes.
He pointed out, I think it was 82% of his catches are first downs or touchdowns. It's pretty good
right.
for AD Mitchell. But what he writes at the end, I'm not sure how often Harmon does comps, but he says he sees a lot of George Pickens. Pretty good.
Okay. Yeah.
He also mentions another receiver as a potential ceiling. And listen.
As a ceiling.
Ceiling.
Jerry Rice.
Glimpses of a blank, insert name here, ceiling.
Uh-huh.
And this is the problem with comps.
Right.
Well, as soon as I say this name, you're going to be like, well, I'll take that.
Because he's going to be my guy in like 8 seconds?
Yep.
Okay.
You want the name?
Sure.
DeAndre Hopkins. Okay.
Yep.
Welcome to the Bills. Who knows if he lives up to that? What I was going to get at is you mentioned DK Metcalf a minute ago.
Yeah.
That these guys, the size, speed guys, unrefined route trees, doesn't run a full route tree.
And Metcalf was one of those analytics guys, if I remember right, where one of the things, actually, I just compared Thomas and Mitchell a lot. The one thing that does separate them, Thomas is maybe a little more like below average, but somewhere in the middle on like some of those advanced stats, like yards per route run, whereas Mitchell is like way at the bottom. Like he is so far below the rest of the class. And if I remember right, that was Metcalf. Right,
it was low on those.
Yeah, because he was splitting targets with A.J. Brown at Ole Miss, and that offense maybe was weird with Chad Kelly. Like there was stuff about Metcalf, and that's maybe why he fell. He fell at the end of the second round, despite the fact that he was 6'4 and ran a super fast 40 time.
And that's what I wanted to get to. So let's think about context, right? We have seen Josh Allen's profile change things that GMs think about quarterbacks. You have to entertain a little bit raw, but he's got things we can't teach. Instead of taking the NFL-ready quarterback, this can be a point about Jaden Daniels going second overall, if he does, right? If he goes ahead of Drake May, won't it be because the athletic profile is better? Why is Mac Jones, you can't possibly take him three. Take Trey Lance there because of the athletic profile. And let's apply that same line of thinking, Joe, from Josh Allen has kind of change the way that you might evaluate quarterbacks because you've got to get things elite traits. Take it to receivers. You're telling me DK Metcalf's success? He's not the best receiver in football, but I don't know, incomplete route tree. What is he? Oh, he's a speed merchant with size, and he's everything. Mm-hmm. You would take that guy in the second round 100 times out of 100.
Right.
So all of a sudden, hey, you know, he's kind of got some of those DK Metcalf red flags where this looks good and this doesn't look good. Well, it worked for DK Metcalf. Why won't it work for A.D. Mitchell? Why won't it work for Brian Thomas Jr. or whatever? You know, the league is constantly evolving, and past results don't guarantee future success. That's true. But past results certainly play into context. Seeing smaller receivers work, that's another trend we've seen as we're talking about the big guys. The size of receivers has been creeping down, 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 down. It used to be you didn't take a receiver under 6 foot. And now, you have to be afraid of that at all. Got plenty of guys that are small having success.
Metcalf had 1,200 yards total in 3 years in college.
Did he have a late breakout year?
No, first year he really didn't play. Second year he had 600 yards. The third year he had 500 yards.
And that's it.
That's it. And then he got drafted in the second round.
And all they do now is throw to him on the sideline, and he dominates people.
He also, and you've made this point, like he is kind of an example of, like, why did he fall? Like, there was number stuff that I think contributed to why he fell. And if you remember correctly, he ran, like, the slowest three-cone drill anyone had ever seen. Like, the three-cone drill, which is what? Like, quickness and, like, he ran a slower three-cone drill than Spencer Brown did. That's real. That's not a joke. Like, he was really slow at that. And that scared probably a lot of people off, which was, hey, you're going to have to do a lot of that. Right, that is side to side to get open. That's like half the route tree where you need that. And I don't even know that those people were wrong. That is a problem for him. But he's so good at the things he's good at that I don't have to worry about doing all that other stuff because the five of the 10 routes, I'm so good at five of them that you don't have to worry about the other five. I'm still going to have my numbers. I'm going to get the production for you because the thing I'm great at overvalues the thing I'm not good at.
Yeah. Hey, DK Metcalf can't get open short area the same way that Cooper Kupp can. Okay, he doesn't have the same job.
Right.
They have different jobs.
Well, that goes to, though, how much of a complete wide receiver do you want for the Bills?
Right. And if they want to spend all those assets, they would be doing it because they're trying to find somebody that's complete.
Right. And I don't know that Mitchell or Thomas. Well, I don't know. I don't know how they rank in that
you never area. Know. DeAndre Hopkins would have probably been said to not be complete. And then
he is.
He's pretty complete by the time he got to his peak.
Very, yeah.
You want instant trivia?
Sure.
I've got instant trivia here.
Instant trivia is presented by The Farmer's Dog, fresh human-grade dog food delivered right to your door.
So, for instant trivia, what I'm looking for is, I saw yesterday, so Devonta Smith gets a big contract, right? That's exciting. Yep. Good for him.
Yep.
And Brad Spielberger might have been the one pointing this out. The difference between the Eagles and the Cowboys is that the Eagles sign guys and get it out of the way, get ahead of the curve. And the Cowboys drag their feet on every signing, and things get ugly with every player. Look what's happening with CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah.
Is it going to get ugly with Micah Parsons? And Dak Prescott. So anyway, that's like a little context here.
Yep.
CeeDee Lamb has the second most receiving yards in the last two seasons. I have the top 10.
The last two seasons only?
Yep, the last two seasons. Who has the most NFL, most receiving yards in the NFL? Top 10. CeeDee Lamb is number two. Joe Kelly's here producing. Joe DiBiase. You two can guess. The top 10 receiving yards the last two seasons.
Number one. How about Tyreek Hill?
Number one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tyreek.
3509 in two seasons.
Okay.
The only other over 3,000 is CeeDee Lamb, 3108.
Okay. How about Ja'Marr Chase?
No.
Last year, was that bad for him?
Okay. He also missed time the previous year. Like four or five games.
Okay. Jefferson missed time too, but his season before that was monstrous.
He's fourth.
He's fourth?
He is fourth.
He missed half the season.
Fourth.
Jeez. Also, could get ugly for him.
Yeah.
I hope.
Top 10 receiving yards last two seasons combined.
Travis Kelce.
No, these are all receivers.
Gotcha. Okay. All receivers. So, we're going to go to... Should not be that hard.
It's not.
Why am I... Amari Cooper.
Eighth.
Okay.
I'm completely blanking here.
How about Mike Evans?
Ninth.
Okay.
Top 10 receiving yards combined last two seasons. You have Hill 1, Lamb 2, Jefferson 4, Cooper 8, Evans 9.
Okay.
And Jefferson 4. Sorry, did I say that already?
Devontae Adams.
Sixth.
Okay. Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Fifth.
What am I missing? 10?
7 and 10.
7 and 10? 7 and 10. Dick Geron. Keenan Allen.
No.
Diggs.
7th.
How did I miss Diggs? Forgot about him already.
He missed half a season, too.
Yeah, pretty much.
And people decided he stunk because of it.
Yeah.
7th, Diggs. And number 10?
Number 10 is...
This one might surprise you.
DJ Moore.
No. 10th in receiving yards over the last two seasons.
Garrett Wilson.
No.
It's going to surprise me a little bit.
I think it'll surprise you a little bit.
Hopkins? Nico Collins.
He's a teammate of somebody already mentioned.
Yep. Okay, it's not Jefferson. It's not Lamb. Is it Waddle?
It's Waddle.
Waddle.
The Dolphins have number 1 and number 10.
It's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
And no Eagles, huh? I didn't even get to the Eagles, guys.
Sorry, then you're missing number 3.
A.J. Brown?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I thought you said A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown, 3.
Forgot that.
Hill, Lamb, Brown, Jefferson, St. Brown, Adams, Diggs, Cooper, Evans, Waddle, the top 10.
Okay.
Good for the Eagles to get Devonta Smith locked up to a deal.
The Slim Reaper.
I thought that was Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's the Slim Reaper.
He's KD.
He's a million different names, isn't he? Doesn't he have like 10 nicknames?
I think so. Devonta Smith has 5 nicknames on Pro Football Reference.
All right. Hit me.
Slim Reaper.
You're
saying it's not even his?
No, that's Kevin Durant.
Okay. Smitty.
All right.
DVS.
No.
Rubber Band Man.
No.
Skinny Batman.
No.
Those are
was that because of Jason Kelce was the fat Batman?
I don't know. Skinny Batman? He's really, really thin. Devonta Smith.
He went...
Really thin.
He went high in the draft as a guy that was small.
Yeah.
And he's dangerous.
6'170". You mentioned McConkey, like someone's going to be calling in the next day that he's small. McConkey is 20 pounds bigger than Devonta Smith. But that says more about Smith, I think, than McConkey.
No nicknames for Brandon Ayuk on Pro Football Reference.
Yeah?
No.
You said Durant has a million nicknames?
Yeah.
Durant, by the way, named a Team USA. Oh my, he really does. Durantula.
Yep.
KD. Slim Reaper.
Told you.
Easy Money Sniper.
What?
The Servant.
Yes, I remember that one.
And Green Room.
Green Room?
I don't know why Green Room. Is that because he went second overall and not first?
No idea.
And Greg Oden went first? I don't know. He got named Team USA, though, yesterday.
Congratulations.
Yep. All the old guys are going to the Olympics.
So you want to know more about Ladd McConkey? They also, by the way, we'll talk about more than just receivers at Georgia. They've got a couple of safeties. They have another receiver that's a deeper pull down the board. And A.D. Mitchell spent some time there with the Georgia Bulldogs as well. Matt DeBerry is going to come up and join us on the other side to chat about these Georgia draft prospects, whether that's, you know, McConkey, Brock Bowers, Amarius Mims, Javon Bullard, safety, and Tyke Smith, safety. Maybe a safety is in the offing for the Bills from Georgia. So stay tuned. Georgia Bulldogs coverage next on WGR.
Mews in motion. Beck, look out from behind. Got the pass away. He threw a strike. Ladd McConkey. McConkey, touchdown, Georgia.
Always good to get a little Brad Nessler in on a Tuesday morning. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe, on a Tuesday. It's nice outside, beautiful outside. Happy spring. 9 days from the draft, and we are going to go to the Western Hotline to chat a little bit about some Georgia Bulldogs prospects and a former Bulldog also, and Adonai Mitchell, who was there for a bit before going to Texas. Joining us on the Western Hotline is Matt DeBerry, who is insider for Dog Post, covering UGA football and recruiting. Matt, good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. Thanks for taking some time this morning.
Absolutely, y'all. Thanks for having me.
So where should we start? Should it be Ladd McConkey? I mean, this is a guy who, here in Buffalo, we are every single receiver that's available, we've learned their name and their family history and their likes and dislikes. Ladd McConkey's been a name we've locked in on a bit. He said he met with the Bills a couple times when speaking with Kay Adams. So tell us a little bit about Ladd and his potential future as a receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, I love Ladd McConkey and what he was able to bring to Athens. But the thing that I liked about him the most was his ability to make big plays in big games. And I know that if he were selected by the Bills, he'd have an opportunity to make a lot of plays at big moments, possibly several years in the playoffs. But when the game mattered most, big third down, when they needed a guy to go to, Ladd McConkey was that guy because he just creates separation on his own. His ability to run routes at his size, his quick feet, his burst, the guy just gets open consistently. You don't have to scheme him open. He gets open on his own, and he just found a way to make plays against Auburn, against Florida, national championship game against TCU, two touchdowns. The guy showed up and did his job every single day from being a former three-star recruit from the North Georgia Mountains that barely got a Georgia offer to one of the best and most productive wide receivers so far in the Kirby Smart era. So he's a special player, and I can't wait to hear his name hopefully come in the first round.
How does he win as a receiver? You know, you mentioned he can get open on his own. He doesn't necessarily have to be schemed open. So what about his game works?
Well, he's a really good athlete, but he works so hard on his footwork, and he can beat defenses vertically. He's not a burner, but he's got plenty of speed, and he can kind of sneak behind defenses. But whether it's in the short passing game, the screen game, there's just a lot he brings to the table. But his ability to run a route, no matter what it is, he does it well, and he works hard on his craft, and he perfects it. And the quick feet, I think, is what's really impressive. He's a multi-sport star, so he's always working on his ability to move. And as a receiver, whether he's on the outside, on the perimeter, or in the slots, if he's in man coverage one-on-one, it's so tough for anyone that I saw in the SEC last year or even in the last several years to stay with him consistently down the field or even 5-10 yards down the field.
Is he someone – you just kind of talked both slot and outside. The Bills in their current situation, and if McConkey is their pick at 28, they've got slot guys – but Diggs and Gabe Davis leaving this offseason, like the perimeter is really where the most opportunity lies. You believe that is translatable, his game, to playing on the perimeter in the NFL?
Somewhat. Yeah, I do think if they're looking for more of a perimeter guy, a former Bulldog, A.D. Mitchell, might be the guy who could play that position in Buffalo a little better. I would still put Ladd McConkey more in the slot and be, you know, an easy kind of third and three, third and four, maybe a third and five option in the middle of the field. He can play on the outside. He did a lot of that at Georgia, making defenders miss on the perimeter, and you look up and dude's wide open down the field. We saw that happen against Auburn, Tennessee, TCU, Florida. So he's been able to do that. Not sure due to his size. I mean, he's not 6'3". He's not 6'4". So I'm assuming Buffalo would like a bigger, kind of longer receiver on the outside. But he's a guy who, if you ask him to do it, he's going to work hard and give you everything he can.
Matt DeBerry on the Western Hotline, Dog Insider, or Dog Post, excuse me.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
So let's get to A.D. Mitchell then. He spent 2 years at Georgia on the field. You just mentioned the fit. I know he's the prototypical X receiver that we've been hearing a lot about for need for the Bills. His time in Georgia went hot. Like, he's young, right? Like, he's a freshman there, but the stat that he's got about in the big games, the guy scores touchdowns. I mean, I know that goes back to his Georgia days.
Absolutely. He dealt with some injuries his first couple of years at Georgia, and of course his first year was a freshman, so it's really hard to see the field early on at a place like Georgia full of talent. But they made sure they got A.D. Mitchell the ball. I mean, he's got size, he's got length, he's got a vertical. I mean, it looks like he just floats in the air when he jumps up to make a play on the ball. But like you said, in the big moments, he caught a touchdown against Michigan in the Orange Bowl, against Alabama in the national championship game, maybe the biggest single reception in Georgia football history. And then he did again against Ohio State, game-winning touchdown, TCU touchdown. He's a big game receiver. He's got tremendous hands. He's another guy who gets open and can run a really clean route for a guy 6'3 and a half, almost 6'4. I forgot what he measured in at the combine, but he's an alpha, and that's a guy that you want on your roster. And I know this is a loaded group of receivers in this draft, but in most other drafts, I feel like A.D. Mitchell would be looked at in maybe the middle of the first round.
Matt DeBerry of Georgia, talking Georgia Bulldogs with us. We've got a number of other names like Brock Bowers, Amarius Mims. I mean, how many first round, second round, first two round picks do you feel like Georgia will have their names called?
It could be up to six. I mean, Kamari Laster is a defensive back that a lot of people love. He's coming off a very, very strong season. Javon Bullard is a playmaking safety who could be a second rounder. But I love Amarius Mims. I think he'll go towards the bottom of the first round. Didn't start a ton, but you can't teach his size and his physicality and his high ceiling. And I think a lot of NFL GMs look at him as kind of this big project that could turn into a possible all-pro at right tackle. So he's a guy that I don't think will escape the first round. Of course, I think Ladd McConkey has a chance to be in that first round. And Brock Bowers is such a special player, one of the best Georgia Bulldogs of all time. And he's going to be a real weapon for whoever picks him at the next level.
6-3-2-43-4-4-8-40 for Bowers. We know the Bills aren't thinking about this. Maybe if this were last year, they would. I mean, they just took a tight end, Dalton Kincaid, but we could see Bowers going to the Jets. You see that mocked a lot. Matt, do you see any team that is the right fit for Bowers as he is an early to mid first round pick generally?
Yeah, I think he's going to be a really good player no matter where he goes. And I know a lot of teams, you know, love Marvin Harrison Jr. and Romo Dunze and those guys for a reason. But Brock Bowers is, he's not your traditional tight end. He's a pass catcher, and he's a guy who gives every rep in practice the exact same way he does on Sundays. And I'll say this about these guys too. These are not divas. Adee Mitchell, Ladd McConkey, Brock Bowers, those guys don't really love the attention. They just love ball. They love to compete. They love to practice. They love the game. They love getting better. They're not going to write quotes on their shoes or their cleats about their doubters, right? They are quiet assassins that just love the game, and they showed that just about every weekend in Athens.
We've been in on all the receivers to the extent where we know the name of Marcus Roseme Jack Saint, not just because he has an awesome name, by the way. Is he someone you think sneaks into the draft at some point? Like, I know he did not test well at the combine, but I've seen stats about, you know, him never dropping a ball in his hand. So his profile, like, I don't expect him to be a high pick, but what do you think of his NFL prospects?
He should absolutely get drafted. He's got good size. Again, he's not a burner, but like you said, his hands are so strong. And I felt like at least one time every game, he would make an A.J. Green type of George Pickens catch where you're saying, wow, that was really something. How did he end up catching that ball? And I always said that they should probably get the ball to him a little more than they did. But he's a player who I definitely think can play at the next level, maybe fifth or sixth round pick. But he showed at Georgia that he can make big catches and big plays, and he did that consistently. And good locker room guy, you know, he could have transferred out when you have Adee Mitchell and Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers getting most of the passes their way, but he stuck with it, and he had a really strong final season last year.
Matt DeBerry of Dog Post joining us on the Western Hotline. Matt, thanks very much for the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Georgia Bulldogs set to get a bunch of guys drafted in the first round, second round, and on. Two safeties, a defensive back. I don't think the tackle's in the mix. I don't think the tight end's in the mix, but McConkey, of course, is.
Bowers will be long gone anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Jets 10 is easily the most mocked for him.
803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. 8 games again in the NHL tonight. Red Wings. Okay. Flyers.
Okay.
Penguins don't play until Wednesday, tomorrow, I think.
And when is that's Capitals and Flyers? Did you see what could happen in that game?
In Caps Flyers?
Yeah.
I did see. It's one of those ones where the Flyers could pull their goalie in overtime.
Right. So the problem for everybody involved, like the other teams, the Red Wings, the Penguins, they could do their work. But that's tonight. Flyers and Capitals. Philly has to win in regulation. So the hypothetical is presents itself. Washington, with a win, clinches that final spot. And if you're a Pittsburgh fan, you need Philly to be ahead. Because if that game is tied with a minute to go, Tortorella is pulling his goaltender. And that would mean an empty net goal would clinch the playoffs for the Washington Capitals.
Yeah.
Because Philly cannot go to overtime. They know overtime does not help them.
Juicy.
Yeah.
A lot of different scenarios. Washington looking good to get in. I've been teasing it for a couple hours. I've got a thing I've never said about the 3-2-1 point system / why the change needs to be made. But again, like, the language is still bad. So if you're someone that hates the loser point, I've got one last chance to convince you that you are fighting the wrong enemy.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
All right.
I'll do that next.
Sabres with the steal. Far side in front. Score! Zach Benson gets the Sabres back to a two-goal advantage again as he taps one in at the near post. Right after, Tampa gets the game within one. Zach Benson.
Dan Dunleavy on the call. Zach Benson scores. Sabres lose. Or sorry, they win. They win to Tampa. They
they lose on the season, I guess. What am I trying to say?
Okay. Yeah. I got a thing.
Okay.
It's one of my missions in life. Rob Rossi tweeted last night. Covers the NHL for The Athletic. Senior writer for The Athletic. Pro Hockey Writers Association. Covers the Penguins, I believe.
Okay.
Biographer of Evgeny Malkin. He wrote, and this is not a wrong point, but I for me, might be semantics, but it's important to me. He wrote, I'll say this, it's the same system for every team, and a credit to the Islanders for exploiting it, but to finish third in a division with 42 losses is an indictment of the NHL's point system. GMs won't change it. It would risk their jobs. But it's time for 3 points for a regulation win. Now, as someone who has been championing a 3-2-1 point system and 3 points for regulation win for, I don't know, 15 years maybe,
yep.
I applaud everyone that gets there.
Yeah.
However, I'm not exactly, you know, in charge of this, but if I were the teacher at the front of the room, I'd say, you got the right answer, but you got there the wrong way.
Okay.
It's not because of the Islanders' 43 losses that they should change the point system. And I always want to ask, why is everyone focused on the wrong fake points? Here's the example for you. A game goes to overtime. 3 points are awarded, okay?
Yeah.
1 point gets awarded for 60 minutes of hockey played to a tie. Mm-hmm. Another point gets awarded for 60 minutes of hockey played to a tie. Another point gets awarded for 5 minutes of 3-on-3 or a shootout.
Mm-hmm.
Which point is the fake one?
It's the second overtime point.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the second Islanders, if you lump in losses, overtime losses, OTLs,
yeah,
you can add that up and have them get 43 losses.
Yeah.
But that's not really how it works. How come we just add that and count that as losses? The exploitation of overtime belongs to other teams. The Rangers have 12 points from overtime or shootout wins.
Yeah. You could still use the Islanders for this point, right?
Well, it depends.
They have 9 overtime wins this year.
That's right. The Islanders have 10 overtime and shootout points.
10 overtime and shootout
The Rangers
points.
Have more.
Yeah.
The Rangers have 12. The Islanders have 10.
Right.
It jumps out at people because the Islanders have so many overtime loss points. They have 16. And what that means is, how many times has an NHL team beaten the Islanders in regulation? What's their regulation loss number? The answer to that is 27.
Yeah.
What's the Sabres regulation loss number? 37.
Uh-huh.
Did they exploit something or did they earn that? When you get to overtime, you have earned something through 60 minutes. You don't have to like the style, but the reality is it's a 60-minute earned point. Then we throw 6 skaters on the ice and we're like, play for another one. And it's valued the same.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why everyone's, no other sport gives a point away for losers. That's right. Football doesn't go to 3-on-3 sudden death.
Right.
They don't do that. Basketball doesn't say, all right, now we're going to have a free throw shooting contest and we'll just count a win as 2 points either way.
Right.
It is not the loser point that is your enemy. It is the bonus point that remains your enemy. And over again, you just get people talking about how, like, did the Islanders exploit it? To a degree. What the current point system is, it's
well, because by the 3-2-1 system I'm looking for, they would not be in, right?
They would be ahead of the Sabres.
They might be ahead of the Sabres, but they wouldn't be in a playoff spot.
They might be in.
28 regulation wins. To get the 3 points, they would have done that 28 out of 82 times. They would have made it.
Yeah, but they also have, as you mentioned, they would have 9 2-point wins.
Right.
How many 2-point wins the Sabres have? Just by comparison.
Do they have any?
They have 4.
4.
4 overtime wins and 2 shootout wins. They have 6. Like the Islanders, they're better than, they're a minus 18 on goal differential. The Sabres are a plus 2. I don't know what you want for that. But I don't think what it comes down to, I was about to say this, is in football we talk about this a lot, like playing not to win versus playing, or playing not to lose versus playing to win.
Yeah.
The current point structure in the NHL standings rewards you for playing not to lose. Just don't lose. If you play 82 ties, you're going to have 82 points. The Sabres finished with 84. If they had gone out on the ice and been allowed to sit on the puck and never move it, For 60 minutes a night, they'd get 82 points. They finished with 84. Playing not to lose is incentivized in the NHL's current system. And if you want a 3-2-1 point system, which I desperately do, what will change? The loser point doesn't change. That's still, it's going to stay there.
Right.
It will be lessened by getting the wins right. You go to overtime, guess what? You just lost the ability to get a point.
Right.
So instead of you're going to get a freebie for playing 3-on-3.
That's what you want, though, right? Like, you yes. want teams not playing for overtime.
Right. I think about this a lot. The Premier League has ties. They don't play overtime. But a loss and a tie are closer than a win and a tie. 3-point win, 1-point tie, 0-point loss. In the Premier League, what do? You play to win. Winning is way better.
Right.
In the NHL, the best thing you can do is, if we can get to the final buzzer, we can get zeros on the board, we're going to guarantee a point, and if we're a team that's got a lot of skill.
That's the Islanders, though, to me. They're not playing in the Premier League. They're playing in the World Cup. They are Switzerland playing against Brazil. Switzerland's better than that. They are Iceland playing against England, saying, we are just going to get this game 0-0 to a penalty shootout, and then we'll just take we'll take our shot.
Sure, but the problem is not them. The problem is that in the NHL,
That they're possible?
No, the problem is that the gimmick win is the same as the actual win.
Right.
They separate it in the goofiest ways in the standings. How about the NHL having a standings page that goes wins, losses, overtime, which you have to infer to be overtime losses. Then it says points, point percentage, then regulation wins, then regulation and overtime wins, then goals for, goals against, differential, home, away, then your shootout record.
Right. Right.
It's nuts. The NHL's, it is definitely a stupid format, should be changed. Feels like there's momentum to do it, but stop getting mad at the loser point. For the longest time, people have been mad about the loser point, when in reality, it is the bonus point that is the fake point.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with that. I just think it is inherently clear the Islanders play hockey to go to overtime every night. That's how they play. And that shouldn't exist. They're not good in overtime, but they play. They are. I just saw a stat this morning. They are by far the best team in the league at preventing chances, and they're like last in the league in like rush opportunities. Like they don't play. They play to get to overtime, and we'll just see what happens.
Did the Sabres not try to become a little bit closer to that version of a team and just fail to do it?
I think they probably did, but no one aspires to be that. That's like, to me, that is a fake way of being good. That's a fake way of getting, you're not going to go deep in the playoffs playing that style of hockey.
Well,
you could argue the Sabres should do that because it's all for them about making the playoffs, not actually winning the cup. But real teams don't play that way.
Okay. Tell me the Islanders aren't a real team. You want their last 10 games?
The last 10 games, they've been a great team.
They changed their coach.
Yeah.
And they are not the team that has just play for overtime. Their last 10 games, got their full schedule here. They've gone 8-1-1 mm-hmm. with wins of 3-2, a loss 4-1, overtime 4-3, 2-1, 4-2, 2-0, 4-2, 3-2 overtime, 3-2 shootout loss, 4-1 win. 8-1-1.
Mm-hmm.
The loser points are to blame. The Islanders are the loser point merchants.
Get for the season as a whole, they still are.
You earn it. If the Sabres had earned more points for regulation ties, they'd be better. They didn't earn it. It is actually a thing. You know, we're way late. Holy cow, sorry.
Oh, no.
It's worth, you earn it more than you ever earn a 3-on-3 goofy hold onto the puck for 3.5 minutes and get the one shot on goal and score it. What should be worth more? There you go. There's my little mini rant for you. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Sabre season's over, and the playoff picture not completely set in the Eastern Conference. Some juicy, juicy games on the way tonight. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh, oh. O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.